No, because you are looking ahead to a weekend and then suddenly this signal processing and that too in biomedical, and you are all particle physicists, so that's something which is well, it's a heterogeneous group, but then many of you are great scientists and particle physicists. Suddenly me talking on signal processing on a Friday, hours before, literally 1 hour before you are supposed to go, that's not very popular. But then I take this opportunity to thank Professor Satyanarayan for calling me here. This is my first talk to you people in TIFR. Now, before we go to the next slide, let me just tell you a few things about the neural signal and neural signal processing and why this is important. You know, the brain is the seat of all the nerves which are coming, carrying both afferent and efferent traffic. Afferent means the traffic which goes from the brain down the, you know, nervous system through the neurons to the body, the motor organs. Suppose I want to lift this, you know, microphone, or suppose I want to lift a glass of water, or suppose for blood avoiding, I give a signal which sends the waves down the, you know, bunch of nerves until the motor organs, and it does the work. That's called afferent traffic. And the efferent traffic, on the other hand, is the one which comes from the motor organs, the tactile sensors, the pressure sensors and other things, into the brain for us to decide what is to be done and what is not to be done. For example, if it is a hot surface and I suddenly touch it accidentally, I don't want to do that same mistake, otherwise I'll burn my fingers. So my brain immediately says, hey, release it and stay back. So this kind of afferent and efferent traffics are there for any every healthy individual. But then for those who had unfortunately suffered from some major brain damage like cerebral stroke or something, this mechanism gets affected. And hardly 10% of the activity of the brain, even today we know, the 90% of the activities are still, is not something which is not known to us. So what we see is that this particular part of the brain which is damaged, which controls maybe a particular activity, gets affected. And it's not really the fault of the organ. Say for example, if you are not able to hold a particular glass of water, or the handle of a you know, door or something, that's not because the muscle is not functional. It's because the signal doesn't come there. So one way, one school of thought which had been doing research in this area, they said, why not record this signal in vitro and study them from a healthy individual and then try to replicate them, and this can be used as a functional electrical stimulation and pumped in into the nerve fibers for these signals to be carried out and eventually reach the motor organs. And the motor organs, for them, it's not possible to find out whether it has come from the brain or it has come from an artificially generated source. So as a result of that, they will be doing the functioning as a normal individual. And the person who had this cerebral attack, which had led to, you know, brain damage or something like that, will have a better quality of life. For example, in fact, this stemmed from this particular research. The motivation came in a particular tragedy which happened in my own family. My father suffered from a cerebral attack in the year 2002, which led to partial paralysis. And therefore, he left, he led the life of a dead man for the next 9 years, needing assistance for everything, even for going to the toilet. So this kind of thing can be ameliorated. The quality of life can be improved. So with this motivation, we thought that it could be done, of course, not on human being to start with, because the work which was done in UK, where the drug and food control authorities are very strict in their permissions and all that. So we tried on a type of frog called Xenopus levis, and the sciatic nerve, which was taken out from the body after dissection, and the surgical implantation of the electrodes were done. And after that, we studied them. So this is not fully electronics, of course, because I'll show you some measurements which are actually done on the biological specimen. But this is how the background is. And let me just tell you, the signal which I am talking of essentially is few microvolts in amplitude. So it's a very, very weak signal. And this weak signal is contaminated by several other signals, such as electromyographic signal, which are coming from the tissues. Okay, and in certain frequency band, say up to about 1 kilohertz or so, it's peaking sometime around 100 hertz. So this is at least 10 times stronger than the electroneurographic signal. So the challenge is to pick up a weaker signal from a mix of signals where there are other stronger signals, and it is the same bandwidth. So you cannot even do a filtering. Filtering in the traditional sense of the term. And then you have noise, and when you are having a recording system, even the electronics is generating some noise, because no electronic circuit has ever been made till date which is completely free of noise, until and unless of course you dip it in liquid nitrogen. And then the third one, the interference and the other signals which are coming from the electromagnetic source, electromagnetic interference, etc. So why record biosignals? That I told you. I mean, this acquisition of ECG, surface EMG is also a part of a monitoring system. For example, another type of element which is there, on which presently I am thinking of working, we have just started, that's the chemical and electrical sensing of brain cells. You know, people do have imbalance of sodium and potassium, which leads to, you know, in the extreme case, it may go even to coma, patient may even go to coma, but otherwise, generally the, you know, body becomes abnormal, the person doesn't talk sense and things like that. So there also you need to have close monitoring and recording of the signal. Similarly, EMG, ECG, and other signals. And the challenges are also, I told you, noise and interference. Amplification near the recording site is important, because as you take it away far, obviously more noise is going to come in and the signal is becoming weaker and weaker. Advances in CMOS technology and the communication technology, and also low power circuit design, has paved the path to the development of this kind of circuit. But the challenges are interference of these signals, which can pick up noise from anywhere, which can pick up other signals from the surrounding, like tissue signals are affecting neural signals, and so on. Amplitudes up to tens of microvolt to tens of millivolts, frequencies up to kilohertz. So again, if you want to do some kind of cancellation of frequencies within the bandwidth, if you want to only have the frequency of interest and the rest you want to cut off, another challenge of the design is that such a low frequency means you need very large capacitor and very large resistors. Now that kind of, you know, large capacitors and large resistors are not permissible. They will not allow you to fabricate on an IC. And again, you need an IC because it has to be an implantable device. So you cannot have even discrete systems. So opportunities, I told you. Threats, these are the threats. We basically did the ENG recording. Now this ENG recording, let me just tell you a few more things about the ENG recording. Usually when you have, you know, surgically taken out a particular type of nerve, it's not one fiber, it's a bunch of fiber, and they all have different thickness, and the velocity through which, the velocity at which these signals pass through these fibers is basically dependent on the thickness of the fiber. So what you need is a velocity selective recording. Okay, if you record at one particular velocity, you are likely to get one signal and miss out several others. So very important information you may miss out. We have at our disposal different techniques. BJT, we all know, MOS, CMOS. And again, when I say CMOS or MOS, there are two options. A MOS can be worked in strong inversion, or it can be worked in weak inversion. Why I am talking of all these things is because in terms of noise, each one of them give different performance. You know, for example, a MOS working in weak inversion may give better noise performance, but then a strong inversion will have perhaps more amplification. So you have to make a choice of the two. I mean, you have to make a choice thinking of the compromise, and area is important, power dissipation is important. So you have to take into account whether you are going to have a MOS in weak inversion as the design of choice, or a MOS in strong inversion as the design of choice, or the good old BJT as the design of choice. Now, this.
Why will BJT be a choice at all? If you want to, I mean, here the variable device or otherwise, the power is one major constraint, right? So how, why will BJT will be?
In fact, we'll come down to the design and you will see. Okay. That BiCMOS design is basically the design of choice. BJT as part of CMOS is known as BiCMOS. And why that is important is because BJT essentially reports a better gain for the same current. For the same current, the GM, transconductance for BJT is better, IC by VT. Now what happens is, if I have to have the current same, why you have to keep the current same? Because my power dissipation is one factor which is limiting. Now the design starts with the power dissipation. My power budget is only 10 milliwatt, let us say. So whatever I have to do, I have to do ensuring that if I have a 3 volts power supply, 3.33 milliampere is my total current dissipation possible. So within that current dissipation, if I have to have a gain, let us say on the order of 80 decibel or so, such that the second stage onwards noise becomes no issue. In that case, which will report better noise, BJT or MOS? I think it's a BJT. So, and then again, there are two types of noise. One is the flicker noise and the other is the floor noise, that's the thermal noise. So I'll discuss all those things. Little bit of electronics is there. I'll try to avoid too much of complication in circuits, but then a bit of electronics, please take it with a pinch of salt. Implantable.
Just one quick question. You talked about velocity.
Velocity selective recording. What happens is the signals, the afferent as well as efferent traffic, which is generated from either electrical stimulation or from the brain, whatever it is, or from the tactile sensors which are located on the motor organs, they travel through these nerve fibers. Now, these nerve fibers are not essentially one particular fiber, it's a bunch of fibers, bundle of fibers. Now each bundle will have several fibers of several thickness, and the signals which flow through them are basically, velocity is basically dependent on the.
So you're saying you have essentially you have different kinds of cables, and your cables,
all cables will carry different velocity.
Talk about velocity of recording.
Velocity of recording in the sense that it's not velocity of recording, it's velocity selective recording. Velocity selective recording in the sense that if you record at one particular velocity, what I mean by that is, suppose you keep the electrodes with a constant spacing, which we will do, but we will still do velocity selective recording. That's a clever way of doing it, that I'll tell you. Now, if you keep the same speed, I mean same spacing, and if you have single fiber, then there is no problem. If you have single fiber, same spacing means the peak will come in every electrode after a constant gap. But if you have a number of fibers, each with a different fiber thickness, then the thing will not be actually adding on. So eventually you will get a signal where some of them will cancel with another, and you will get a blurred kind of picture which will not be giving you the actual frequency component which the original electrical stimulation will be having. I'll show you the results, it will be clear to you in a moment. Now what we decided finally is that we will use platinum electrodes, which is mounted on a cuff, multi-electrode cuff they call it. We will be using 11 of them, so we can have 10 channels which can be recording. One will be the reference channel, so 11 channels will be there, and these channels, these cuffs will be identically spaced, so maybe 1 centimeter apart from each other, and they will be several millimeters in diameter, so essentially a very small thickness of cylinder on which these cuffs are placed. They are platinum cuffs. Why platinum as a metal is chosen? Because it's a noble metal and it can be implanted surgically, and it has been reported up to 15 years without much of a problem it can withstand within the human body, or for that matter any living body. Now, a system of simultaneous recording of 10 channels for velocity classification. This velocity classification I'll just explain, bear with me for a moment. Low noise, the range of signal is 1 hertz to 5 kilohertz, and we want that input referred noise voltage. Now, what is input referred noise voltage? Is a little bit technical term. I'm just explain it to you. Suppose you don't give any signal, okay, and if you measure the output, if your output is having a very high gain, you will see at the output you will still get some signal. That's the noise. You have not given any signal, you are still measuring the output. How do we do that? We generally short circuit the input to ground for measuring the voltage signal and find out for a gain, let us say 80 dB, which means 10,000, a gain of 10,000. So even if you have few nanovolts of noise, that will be amplified by 10,000 nanovolts. Okay, so that kind of signal you will get at the output. So that, if you go for the power spectral density, why we go for power spectral density for noise? Because noise which will be eventually cancelling in case we don't go for squared term. Because some noise may be positive, some noise may be negative. So if you just take the average, you may not get the right picture. So to get the right picture, you go to take the square. So negative becomes positive again, and then you integrate over the range. And if you do that, and then if you divide that by the gain, that's known as input referred noise voltage. Okay, so this particular amplifier system which we have designed should not be having an input referred noise voltage which is more than 300 nanovolt. That's the meaning of this particular thing. Now, this 300 nanovolt of course takes care of the voltage noise as well as the current noise. The question of current noise, why I am referring to, is because when there is a small amount of current, again the amplification is by 10,000. Okay, so that also will increase and that also will give some voltage. How to measure that? We generally short with a 100 kilo ohms resistance the input. So whatever is the voltage drop across that, current is converted into voltage. A very small noise current, but coming across 10 kilo ohms of resistance, so it has appreciable amount of voltage, and that reflected to the output, and again you divide that by the gain, so you get the current referred input noise. And of course low crosstalk. Crosstalk means inter-channel interference. I have got 10 channels. So if I go for a system which will have a lot of crosstalks, again the same velocity, selectivity, everything will go basically. A set of 10 ready to use signal processing unit. This is something which I will not speak of because this is a post processing system. What we go for is a dipole system, not a tripole system. The tripole system is done by MATLAB at a subsequent stage. This is not going to be part of this particular talk because that's much more elaborate. And that is why, we actually are able to cancel the electromyographic signal. I told you the electromyographic signal is a stronger of the two in the same bandwidth, particularly between 1 hertz to 1000 hertz. Electromyographic signal kind of picks up at, it has a peak at 100 hertz. So that is where the electroneurographic signal is also there. Electromyographic signal is also there, and the electromyographic signal, the tissue signal, is stronger. So you have to remove that. Traditional filtering will not work. So what we have done is adaptive cancellation. Adaptive cancellation means basically this placement of the signal, triodes and the electrodes are such that the electromyographic signal kind of cancels with each other, and the electroneurographic signal will be enhanced. Okay, it's like two op amps, positive negative and then negative positive, and then the output of these two op amps are fed to a third op amp, third amplifier. I shouldn't say the word op amp, the third amplifier, where which is going to be used as a difference signal. So the electromyographic signal will cancel out, not exactly of course, but almost, and the electroneurographic signal will be taken up. So that is how the technique is.
Only the common mode signal you can cancel out. how will you cancel out?
Electromyographic signal is essentially a common mode signal.
For,
but yes, it does not traffic, it does not flow from one end to the other. Electroneurographic signal flows.
Okay.
Electromyographic signal is, you know, with the growth of the tissue. So it is not really flowing from one electrode to the other electrode to the extent that one is positive, the other is negative.
Okay.
That's why we are fortunate. Had it been so, then it would have been difficult. But still there is a catch. The catch is that I have talked about 15 years of, you know, safe implantation. Now in 15 years, your tissues will grow. Some will decay. So what is possible to be cancelled today may not be possible to be cancelled exactly tomorrow. Plus there are some variations which are because of noise and other factors. So those things also will not be exactly cancelling. So the way out for that is to adaptively tune the circuits. Again, that is not part of this, but I will give you a reference in which the part adaptive cancellation of the signals are elaborated. So what we are going to present, we are going to limit our discussions to only the front end, not the adaptive cancellation, not the cancellation of the EMG. We are only discussing about the front end, and the front end is consisting of an amplifier system. That amplifier system should have a noise, input referred noise voltage, which is less than or equal to 300 nanovolts, which should have at least about 80 decibel of voltage gain, and which should have a bandwidth which is no less than 5 kilohertz, that is the minimum. Now this is how the system looks like. As I told you, this is a platinum electrode and this is the cuff. It looks quite big, but it's not so big. Only this cuff is having a diameter of few millimeters, and this is maybe at the most a few centimeters. Okay, and there are 11 of them. Okay, and this is how what I was talking of, a very brief system of dipole and tripole system. This processing is done by MATLAB, so we will not discuss about that. As you see here, this is the ENG. ENG flows from this way, but EMG, electromyographic signal, it grows with the tissue. Okay, so if these two are considered together, you will find that electroneurographic signal is positive in one case, negative in the other case. So when you go to the third tripole amplifier, they will kind of cancel each other. On the other hand, electromyographic signal is not like that, it is in unidirection. So therefore, when they go to the tripole stage, they do not enhance anymore. Here there is an amplification factor of 2 for electroneurographic signal, ENG, but for electromyographic signal, it's 0. So that's how it is cancelled, but then not fully. As I told you, the tissue grows unevenly. So what you have designed today, you cannot go on changing the, you know, implanted device every 2 months. Surgically it cannot be implanted, surgically it cannot be removed and again put back in so frequent duration. So therefore what you have to do is, you have to eventually go for a adaptive system. That adaptive system, again, I am not talking of in this.
So at least I felt that from your the previous slide, where you are talking about actual electrode, thought it would be nice if you can get an idea about the signal production.
I'll show you. This is how it looks like. So the third slide, this is the action potential. They call it action potential. You see here, this is one going to the positive, this is going to the negative. Again, that negative and positive, they are shorted. So electroneurographic signal at this stage gets enhanced, while electromyographic signal at this stage, at the output of this, gets cancelled.
So, just a quick question, in your adaptive scheme, is it fair to say that your electroneurographic signal gain will also keep changing as you change the adaptive?
Yes, definitely. But then adaptive signal, what it does is, I'll show you, it's a feed-forward network. So, ultimately, when after the second stage, we use a feedback. So, that's a gain of 50 by 50k, okay, so gain of 1000. That will be depending only on the resistor ratio. The feedback system has a big advantage. Even if your electronic system gain changes, okay, if your feedback is a passive feedback, a negative feedback, it gives you a stable gain. That you all have to agree with me. bit of electronics, but then, you know, I can't resist the temptation because that's what I've been doing all 30 years. And that's what I know, the only thing I know. Okay, so now this is, this is how the adaptive, the velocity selectivity that you had asked for. You see, this particular electrode will have this peak and another one. These are two different signals, not the same signal. Why two different signals? Because one is through one fiber, the other is through another fiber. Okay? Now the other fiber having a diameter which is different from this fiber will allow a faster rate or a slower rate depending on whether the thickness is more or the thickness is less. If the thickness is more, the speed will be more. If the thickness is less, then the speed will be less. So in the next one, if you see, this particular shift has gone up. Again, this shift has gone up, this shift has gone up, which means even though they are equally spaced, the spacing is equal, but because of two different velocities, that nice little peak here and this tiny peak there, they are kind of spreading out. So what happens is, the next slide will show you. In the next slide, of course, this part we'll talk of little later. This part, can you see here, there is a tau factor here, and within square bracket, of course, it's slightly small and may not be visible. We are introducing a delay in the MATLAB. We are introducing a delay, and this delay ensures that the tiny peaks, they all add up, and the big peak also add up. So what at the end we are getting is an enhanced big peak and an enhanced tiny peak. And this delay is done by the post-processing unit. This whole thing is a post-processing unit, followed by, of course, this is a symbol of a filter, bandpass filter. You see the middle line is passed and the top and the bottom is stopped. And at the output, you have the electroneurographic signal as it is, with some amplification and with less of noise, hopefully. I don't know, frankly speaking, because we did some recording. We got some very interesting results that I was just sharing with another colleague of yours. I'll discuss that, but what is the significance of this peak? Why this is more, why that is less? I don't know. Okay. Now, we are going to concentrate on this section, the one in the middle, that is the first rank preamplifier, the AC coupling stage. I'll tell you why the AC coupling stage is needed, and then the second rank amplifier. Only these three things we are ensuring. Now again, I wanted a gain of 80 dB, which is 10,000. So it makes sense if I space the gain in equal sections. So this one should give me a gain of 100, and this one should give me a gain of 100. So 100 into 100 is 10,000, that's 80 dB. Okay, 1 dB is 20 into log of gain, that's dB. Why this AC coupling stage is needed, I'll tell you a bit later. Okay, so that's one thing which we have to do. Next, before that, let me just tell you, we have several choices. I started telling that we have a choice of either CMOS or BiCMOS or BJT. Now, in any case, the basic structure should be one of these. This is the BiCMOS stage, where you can see two NPN transistors and a current mirror, which is a PMOS current mirror. And the other is a full CMOS version, in which there is a NMOS current mirror and a PMOS input stage. So either I'll build my amplifier around this topology, or I'll build my circuit around this topology. Now, which one should I prefer and why? I had specified that my input referred noise voltage should not be more than 300 nanovolt, and my power budget has also been fixed. So my power budget will decide my current, and for that current, I'll have to ensure that my noise does not go beyond, and yet it gives an amplification of 10,000. Okay, so these are the boundary conditions which I have. Now, again, we will not go into too much of noise analysis, which is a part of another paper. I will tell you that paper where only the pre-amplifier design has been elaborated. The best option for both flicker noise, and flicker noise is 1 over f, which means at DC the noise is maximum, as frequency goes up the noise reduces asymptotically, 1 over f. So it's like a asymptotic decay, and it eventually after a few kilohertz it will become a flat thing and eventually it will become 0. So in the noise floor it is the thermal noise which is important. Thermal noise has a fairly stable horizontal line like response, and flicker noise will have a asymptotic decay. Now what happens is, we have done this elaborate calculation and we find out that for the same power budget, for better gain, okay, this is the optimum choice. Neither this in strong inversion nor this in weak inversion. In fact, in order to have a strong inversion or weak inversion all CMOS stage, we calculated the size of the transistor becomes unusually large. Something like W becomes 2000, 20,000, 200,000 and L becomes 2. So that kind of an unusual shaped transistor is not advisable, particularly when chip area should be kept minimum in order to have an implantable device, because I started telling that recording near the body, near the source of signal is better. The farther it is, the more will be the noise. Now why this particular high pass stage is needed? As you see here, this is a transconductance stage. This kind of op amp like symbol with a cut section there, it shows output is a current, input is a voltage. So I by V, that's conductance, transconductance stage. So that's a transconductance stage, and that multiplied by resistance will give you a voltage, and this voltage is followed by a low pass filter. Now this low pass filter essentially will ensure that about 30 hertz or 30 kilohertz or so, beyond that things will be not transmitted. But then after this I am having a high pass filter, so eventually I will get a band pass kind of response. Now why this high pass stage is needed? The high pass stage is needed because along with, it's a feed forward system. This first topology, either here or this, this topology is a feed forward system, because I have not fed the output to the input. It's not a feedback system. Second stage will be a feedback system, but not the first stage. When I have a feed forward system, how much time I have got?
Are you going to dwell a little more on this, even from the frequency analysis point of view?
Yeah.
Since you are going to go with 1 over f for the, now I am talking about the
noise
devices. So I still don't understand the why you preferred, you did say that for given the power, the BJT solution is…
BJT, not BJT, bipolar, bipolar solution will give you the best noise performance.
Where is this coming from?
This coming from the noise model of BJT. I will, just after this I will show you a calculation. Okay, and in fact if I go to the last slide, I can show you a paper by Robert Rieger and Nick Donaldson, etc., which was forerunner of this paper, where they had dealt with only this part, not the measurement part, only that part. Okay, I was not an author in that. So that design, they had elaborately shown the analysis, noise analysis of BJT, bipolar, that means your BiCMOS, and in fact we have done a compromise. Actually we have not done BiCMOS in BiCMOS process, no. We have done lateral PNP.
That's what you wrote in the very beginning.
Yeah, lateral PNP. We have done BiCMOS all right, but BJT we have not actually fabricated. We have fabricated lateral PNP. So that was kind of a compromise solution, because cost was more for BiCMOS, cost was less for this. And we found that for our frequency of interest, the performance does not degrade that much. And Indians, you know, they are famous in economizing. So we did that. So this particular thing is, I think, understood. Now, why we need a high pass filter at this stage, I will quickly go through. because high pass filter is essentially for stopping the offset. You all might have seen, those of you particularly who have worked in electronics, you have seen that whenever we design an amplifier, suppose we give a signal with a reference level which is 0, the output will not be exactly 0. That comes because of non-matching of the transistor. Say for example, here you have a current mirror, this is not current mirror. So here you have a DC level which is different from this DC level. So as a result of that, there will be a shifting of the output stage from low to high or high to low. Now this particular shift from low to high or high to low will be, will be amplified in the next stage. Now when the next stage it is getting amplified, it may so happen that we will not get any signal at all because it will go into saturation if you have a very heavy offset. So that offset needs to be cancelled. So that offset can be cancelled by a DC blocking stage, and DC blocking stage means basically a high pass filter. Corner frequency of the high pass filter is, you know, the basically what we go for is up to, you know, from 5 kilohertz up to 35 kilohertz or so. Now, coupling with the low pass filter, it gives you a band pass, eventually it gives you a band pass stage where from DC up to about 5 kilohertz we get, and that's more or less sufficient for us to get the entire information.
The high pass is 3 microseconds.
This one.
Low pass.
No, that low pass.
No, low pass.
60K.
60K with 50.
No. 60K plus this. This will do come in parallel. These two will come in parallel.
That doesn't make much of a change.
Well, that's a low pass section. And if
the frequency over there, the time constant over there, if I just took 60K and 50 puff, is just 3 microseconds. So that is actually 300 kilohertz.
Yeah, 300 kilohertz is
and
there. That's the low pass filter. Low pass filter means it will have a rollover like that. Okay, so that's 300 kilohertz. It's not actually 300 kilohertz. I mean, I've calculated it. It's 35 kilohertz.
Okay.
35 kilohertz. After 35 kilohertz, it will have a rollover. That said, next stage is a high pass stage. And high pass stage will have a lower 3 dB cutoff, which is
5 kilohertz,
you said. Or less than that, perhaps. Okay, so 5 kilohertz to
DC is excluded actually.
Almost.
You said it was
no, but
kind of picked up the DC.
No. It will not be the low key. This high pass stage I have not yet designed. High pass stage only I have shown you. High pass stage when we design will take into account the DC also. Actually, DC has to be blocked. High pass stage means DC has to be blocked. We will block the DC only about 100 hertz or so, where we have first of all the EMG peaking, and second the place where 1 by F noise becomes maximum. Okay, but we will also introduce some noise by the high pass stage, and that noise has to be matched with this noise. That's a slightly complex analysis. Okay, so we understand that this particular structure is more or less accepted. Okay, you're not happy with the high pass stage because I have not explained it to you. Let there be a question on high pass stage. Okay, why high pass stage is not designed like that. Okay, so we also more or less accept, again I have not shown you the calculation, that this gives you the best noise performance. Okay, this is the circuit. I don't want to explain it because let me just quickly tell you, this is a input stage. Why this signal is needed? Because a BJT is a current driven device, it's not a voltage driven device, so you need a bias current IB. And what is the value of this bias current? This bias current is IC upon beta. Now this bias current is on the order of few microvolt, microampere. Will you allow this few microampere of current through the nerve signals of a frog or the tissue of a frog? I don't think you will, because that kind of a signal, if it goes, a frog may even die. So that signal has to be supplied to the amplifier, otherwise it will not work. But you will still not work that this signal, DC signal, heavy current should not pass through the body of the frog. So what we have done is we have generated this signal. You can see this signal is one PMOS and another PNP transistor. Okay, these two have to be driven. So how we have generated? It's a very clever design actually. This PNP and this, they have kind of been connected here with the current mirror, and this current mirror has generated this current as well as this current. So this biasing current effectively is generated by the current mirror. So this current flows through this, but does not come from the tissue. Okay, tissue only gives a voltage, and a very very small, maybe of the order of picoampere or nanoampere of current. So the tissue is not damaged. There are several other things actually in this particular design which I don't think I have time to explain, but these are some of the dimensions. And as you see here, this 550 and 65, this is 1 and 2. This is the biggest, these are the two biggest transistors which you have used. Others are all fairly small. And these biggest transistors, again, they are bipolar transistors. And these bipolar transistors have been very cleverly done. As I told you, Indians are good in economizing because we don't have a lot of fund to design a chip. So what we do is we decided to fabricate a lateral PNP. In a lateral PNP, again, there is a problem. We calculated that high current IC by VT. Okay, and that IC by VT current will give you a good, you know, transconductance gain also. But what happens is when there is a very heavy, you know, this is related to more of solid state physics than electronics, very heavy, you know, minority carrier congestion near the emitter area, this gain will drop. So what you see here is not a single transistor, it is a parallel of 24 transistors. It's a parallel of 24 number of transistors, which is elaborated in the paper, but I have intentionally not included because I don't want to bombard with a lot of electronic circuits because I understand it's a heterogeneous group. So this particular thing is a collection of 24 transistors. That's the reason why it is so big, and yet the power budget has not been crossed because 280 microampere is the current which we have consumed for giving a gain of, you know, whatever, 10,000. Okay. Now coming to the DC coupling, AC coupling capacitor. This is where you had some queries, and let us try to see. You have one option is to use a capacitor and a resistor, and we want that my lower 3 dB cutoff should be something like 100 hertz or below 100 hertz. Below that we will block. Okay, so if we calculate, this becomes a very large capacitor and a very large resistance. And I actually show you, we have still used 65 picofarad of capacitor, which consumes something like 60,000 micrometer square area, which is by far the largest area in the chip. Okay, that one capacitor was more than the entire circuitry, including even the lateral PNP transistors, which were so large. So very large capacitor, still larger capacitor, is not really wise. Okay, now with even 65 picofarad capacitor, we got a resistance which is about 8 mega ohms. Now 8 mega ohms resistance again would have taken large area. So what we decided is to go for a very clever design again, NMOS transistor and a PMOS transistor, both working in triode mode. Okay, this morning we were discussing about a voltage dependent resistance. Now we don't want a voltage dependent resistance, we want a passive resistance, almost like a passive resistance, and yet we are using two transistors. So one option is to make sure that the voltage dependence part kind of cancel out. That's why we have used one NMOS and one PMOS. In the NMOS, whatever is the gain, in the PMOS, that will be kind of cancelled out. Again, I will not go into the exact mathematical deductions. I can show you, probably it is, no, it's not given. Okay, it's there in the paper, first paper which I had referred to, exact mathematical calculation, how it kind of cancels each other, that is given. So as you see here, Vin is my, you know, input to the AC coupling stage, not the main input, the output of the low pass filter. Output of the low pass filter is fed into this, and we have extremely long resistors, transistors, 2 by 295 and this is 2 by 205, and these two long, you know, transistors, they together form a resistor which does not vary very much with respect to input voltage. Okay, the exact calculation I will show you, but this again has a problem, and that problem is this is a device, two very large transistors. This will also introduce some noise, because any, you know, transistor is basically introducing some noise. We have cancelled the noise by using BiCMOS, lateral PNP, blah blah blah, and now we are again using two large transistors. But the noise here is fairly less, because 8 mega ohms collectively it's giving. So you can imagine the kind of current which passes through the transistor. The kind of current which passes through the transistor will be on the order of pico or perhaps femto, okay, ampere. So that will be the reason why the noise will not be very much. But even then, we have calculated that noise, and we will show you in the next figure that the output noise power spectral density before and after the RC filter. So this was before the RC filter, okay, and this is after the RC filter. You have seen one thing, that the noise in the DC part, in the DC part is fairly chopped off, because it's a high pass stage. High pass stage means DC is blocked, okay, but we have also introduced some noise between, let us say, 10, this is 20, 30, 40 hertz to about 1 kilohertz. So about 50 hertz to 1 kilohertz, this range, we have introduced some noise, and actually this area is equal to this area. Does not look so, no?
Which area?
This large area I claim is equal to this area because of the log scale. This is a logarithmic scale, that's a, I mean, this area looks bigger, but actually if you integrate you will find they are matching. Now you could have asked that we could have used still better, in the sense that if we go for a bigger capacitor and a bigger resistor, perhaps this noise figure could have been flatter and we could have got further less noise. We didn't do that, because first of all this will lead to 300 nanovolt or less, 291 nanovolts in fact we got, so that is less than 300 nanovolts, that's fine. Secondly, if we go for the capacitor value which will give you still further noise, further less noise, you will see perhaps the whole circuit will be consumed by the capacitor, one capacitor itself, which we thought was not necessary. And you see here the voltage dependent resistance which results minus 0.1 volt to plus 0.1 volt, that means 100 millivolts to plus 100 millivolts, so 200 millivolts, that's a fairly high voltage, 200 millivolts, considering the fact that my, you know, input is microvolts. Okay, I am getting a series transistor, a series resistor which is like this, and if you compare that with a single transistor resistor, that means a PMOS transistor, it will be highly nonlinear, while this is fairly linear. Okay, we go for the second rank amplifier. The second rank amplifier is a third amplifier after the AC coupling stage. Again, this particular design is a standard OTA design. Okay, this current goes like this, and this eventually, you can see that line here, is goes here and this goes here. So from, you know, differential, completely fully differential to single ended, we have to convert. And this is a class AB stage. Class AB push pull amplifier we need, because we have to amplify by a larger amount, and we cannot do that by increasing the current very much, because if we increase the, having a single stage amplifier, if I increase the current, my power budget will be crossed. So I will not explain the class AB amplifier. This particular thing has a reference which is Allen and Holberg, a standard, very standard book. okay, page number 225 or something. We have, I teach that book. I teach from that book, that's the reason. It's not that I'm great, but I teach, so I know, remember. Pardon?
I'm sorry, I just said, I'm joking, I said the book is great.
Yeah, the book is definitely great. And unlike most other books, you know, the designs work. Most other books you'll find the designs don't work. I don't want to name them, but many of them don't work. So, this is how it looks like, and the transistor dimensions are given. I'll quickly go to the result. This is the total layout, okay? And you can see here, this is the second rank amplifier, so small. This channel selector multiplex, that's this, okay? And the AC coupling stage, which is this, these two are the, you know, like this, these are all the AC coupling stages. And this is the, you know, preamplifier. This is the preamplifier. So preamplifier takes maximum area, and of course the capacitors. This is something else. Again, Indians are good in econ and make a few more chips on different circuits, but we use the same wafer area so that the cost could be shared. They charge on the basis of the minimum surface area, minimum area of the chip. So within that area, whatever you do, you are charged for that. So there's no point in keeping this, you know, blank spaces, so we use that.
So just a quick question, this includes all your 12 channels?
Everything, everything. In fact, it includes much more. Okay? Dimension I'll show you. Next slide will show you the dimension. This is 3 mm by 3 mm. These are the, you know, gold wires which will connected to the, will be connected to the, you know, bonding pads, and eventually from the bonding pad it will be a packaged chip, PGA, okay, 48-pin PGA we had, okay. So I have only told you about 50% of this paper because I have only 1 hour of time. Full electronics, Dr. Satyanarayan has also advised me not to go for, and I also decided not to spoil your, you know, Friday afternoon, you know, for electronics. This is how you can see here that 3 dB cutoff is about 100 hertz to, you know, little more than 10 kilohertz. So that's within your range. And this is the dotted line is a simulated, and this is the measured version. Next is, you can also see the input referred noise voltage taken from the two channels, closed, chosen at random, okay. Input referred noise voltage of, you know, there are 10 channels, so any two channels we took, okay, and we measured the input referred noise, and likewise we got for all the 20 chips which we fabricated, and the average is given here. So this is the actual measured one, the thicker line, and the dotted line is the simulated one. It's obviously better, I mean, simulation is always better because fabrication will have some, you know, non-linearity and all that, irregularity and inaccuracy, but still within the power budget, within the noise budget. And if you go for the integration of the power spectral density, you will find we have, you know, tabled the results. It's less than 300 nanovolt input referred. Average input referred voltage noise taken from two channels chosen at random from the 5 chips used for figure 4, that is 10 channels in all.
What is this? This is 4 nanovolt. This is per root hertz. Yeah.
This is not the integrated one.
Sorry, square root.
It is only,
sorry,
this thing. Okay. I mean, I apologize if I have not explained, just shown you the figure, because again noise is another topic. This is the specification and this is the measured. As you see, number of channels, this is power consumption, 50 milliwatt was our ideal. We consumed only 24 milliwatts. Circuit area, of course, there was no specification because we wanted to have as small as possible, and we got something like 12 millimeter square. I showed you the scale, 3 millimeter on this side, 4 millimeter on that side, so that is 12 millimeter square. Mid-band gain was 80 dB, the frequencies were all right, CMRR, PSRR, etc., they were all right. Adjacent channel interference crosstalk, again I am not showing you the exact measurements, they are all given in the paper, if you are interested then you can get it. In fact, this is better than this, and input referred noise voltage at 1 kilohertz, 1 hertz and 1 kilohertz, you can see is this. Now why 1 hertz it is more? Because 1 by f noise is the culprit, and input referred current noise also is fairly less. Total it is 291 as I told you. Residual DC current is 15.5 nanoampere positive input and 20.25 nanoampere negative input, which is acceptable. We wanted to have further reduced in that, but even this is okay. Now, a bit of time I will spend on the system. This is how the whole thing looked like. This is, I have not talked of, this is the MATLAB based post processing system, which was the second amplifier stage, which I did not mention. That was the tripole stage, which cancelled the EMG and enhanced the ENG. We only talked about this part, okay. And this is the stimulator. Stimulator also comes here, and this stimulation sends the signal from this place to that place. And this is the reference electrode, that is why you have kept it separately, and this is needed for this tuning of this particular post processing unit, and this was the amplifier system. This is how it actually looked like in real life, and you can see here it is the whole thing from here to here, it is only about 40 millimeter, so that is 4 centimeter. Okay. This is a very interesting result we observe. I was just discussing with you this afternoon. When we are giving microcoulomb, you know, this 0.3 microcoulomb of stimulation intensity, that means here we are giving 0.3 microcoulomb. Suppose we are giving this black bar to the right, it shows a scale of 50 microvolt. If we select, if we record from the channels, and you can see these are the spacings, 0, 3.5, 7, 10.5, all equal spacing. You can see only one velocity we are detecting, one particular peak, and that is traveling, and that particular peak is more or less coinciding because we have the post-processing unit that takes care of the delay and it enhances. Now the same picture, suppose I increase it to 1.1 microcoulomb, which means about 9 times, okay. If you give a higher stimulation, you see instead of 1, you are getting 2 nice little peaks. One is this one, the other is, you can see here, this is a peak. Of course, there are a lot of noise, but these 2 little peaks are there. So that means this is another interesting kind of observation which we made while actually measuring this. This was never explained to us why when we increase the electrical stimulation, it will generate more number of signals. Again, some biological process perhaps which we do not know. As I told you, we do not know about the you know, the system of brain activity, only 10% of that probably, if you can take a picture. Then finally, we conclude, the ENG recording has been done, and afferent signals from natural sensors can give information on skin contact, force, position, are able to usably, this is S is missing, usable in closed loop neuroprosthetics. And major challenges, of course, the amplifiers require stable response from clinically implanted electrode. NAVCAP electrode provides a solution, 15 years without much of a problem has been reported, okay. Then the next part is a very low noise high gain dipole outputs, velocity classification and precise EMG cancellation. Now, when I said precise electric cancellation, let me request you to accept it on the surface value, because I have not explained the, you know, adaptive cancellation part of it here. That is there in reference number 6 and 7 in this particular list of reference. There are 30 references here. Challenge of recording extremely small EMG in presence of noise is made by specially designed low noise amplifier front end using lateral PNP in standard CMOS process. So, this is what the catch is. We did not increase the price. We did not go for a BiCMOS process. We went for a CMOS process, but used the lateral PNP transistor in this and 24 of them in parallel in order to have the equivalent gain. AC coupling was done to remove the preamplifier output offset voltage, defines the lower cutoff frequency at about 300 hertz, uses a very high, very large active resistance with acceptable linearity. You know, that linearity part we have seen in that concave figure. Second RAM amplifier is an OTA plus class AB stage. Before I end the talk, let me just tell you some very interesting, while writing this paper, we came across and we thought this was most appropriate for this. In 1743, this gentleman, Kruger, he said, all things must have a usefulness. That is certain. Since electricity must have a usefulness, and we have seen that it cannot be looked for either in theology or in jurisprudence, there is obviously nothing left but medicine. I thought to conclude this using this. The whole idea is, you know, this part of the work has been done, but it is still not complete, because there is still scope for improvement in the design, and we want to go for more measurements, maybe on rabbits, maybe on other small mammals, and eventually, if possible, you know, may not be me, maybe after my death somebody, on this human beings, so that the quality of life of those who had suffered a cerebral attack like my father did, and he died of course, and someday if it is done, I am sure his soul will be happy. This is the paper which we referred to for the amplifier system, where you had the noise analysis completely done. This paper and another one by the same author, 6 and 7, that gives you the analysis of adaptive cancellation, which I have not talked of. Velocity selective is given here. Okay. Low noise, these are all, this gives you the noise analysis. Vitos is a very well known author. He is a pioneer in giving E and CVDs, mostly gave the noise models. He is a very senior member of IEEE also, a fellow of IEEE. He was awarded in many occasions. Alan Holberg, I could not resist the temptation of referring to, because we copied from his text, so we have to acknowledge, and we did. And finally, this one for the electrodes which we used. This was first used by them. Schottler was one of the co-authors of our paper. And this is it. Okay. This is the building of BITS Pilani KK Birla Goa campus, which is my present employer.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deepak. So, there any question?
Yeah, I should have asked. Sorry.
What is this velocity difference?
velocity selectivity or velocity reference? Yeah, I had actually mentioned briefly the velocity will be something between 28 meter per second to about 42 meter per second. That is the range of velocity which we observed, measuring from these two figures, this one and the one before. In fact, in the first figure, we had only one velocity, as you can see. In the next one, when we increase the stimulation almost 10 times, beyond that we didn't master the courage to do, and we got few more velocities. In fact, this was this one we had just one velocity, while in this you had two velocities, two peaks. No. In this case, we have taken out the, it's in vitro measurement. In vivo is where you have the electrodes planted and surgically implanted, and then after that, by surgery, you again rejoin the nerves. In vitro is like you take out the nerve fiber, okay, keep it in formalin or certain other chemicals, and then you generate the electrical stimulation externally. Connect it at one end, place the electrodes, and then to do the measurement. So here in this case, the stimulation is not coming from the brain. It is coming from an artificially recorded system. As I told you, the final objective, if it is to improve or have some therapeutic value, not just diagnostic value. What we have done is diagnosis, not therapy. Therapeutic value, suppose you wanted to have, first and foremost, you will have to have the stimulation generator of the stimulation as well as the nerve fibers in an implanted system put in the body. You have to separately find out the signals which are generated by the human being or by any other mammal for specific jobs, for example, for bladder voiding. When we feel the pressure, the brain gives the signal and we go for the nature's call. Isn't it? So that kind of signal, we have to identify which type of signal is generated for bladder voiding. And that requires continuous monitoring, continuous measurement. We have to see a living species, when does it go to pass urine? And before that, what kind of signal comes? For human being also, that kind of signal comes when it comes. And then we have to generate that externally, maybe after a period of every 2 hours or so, so that a person who is having paralysis will be able to, at least without assistance, without a, you know, basically you live the life of a, not of a dead man, which sadly my father did, and which made me motivated to work on this project.
Okay.
Is there any the other question I should have? I don't know.
Questions, they will again interact with you.
Yeah, in case you are interested to interact with me, I am here in this guest house, courtesy Dr. Satyanarayana, in room number 53. I'll be more than happy if some students take up this to carry it forward further. I am ready to share all my so-called secrets with him or her. Okay.
Thank you once again.
Okay.